Good evening. Welcome to Beijing Diary. This is the Sekai Report for Friday, June 10th, 2022. We've got lots to talk about tonight, so let's get right into it. First of all, I should clarify, listening to the last podcast, I realized that I said that Ma Ying-jeou was the former mayor of Taipei and then became the president of China. I should have said the president of the Republic of China. The Republic of China is the China that's on Taiwan, and the People's Republic of China is the China that's on the mainland. So that brings up a question. They both claim to be the real China. But, you know, when I get a letter from outside of the country, it just says China. It doesn't say People's Republic of China. So what does mail sent to Taiwan say? I don't know. If you look at the on the Podbean page for last podcast, for podcast number 6, you see that I have a screenshot there of the stamp that you get when you enter Taiwan. If you're a United States citizen, if you have a U.S. passport, you get 90 days on arrival. And it says ROC, which is Republic of China, and then Taiwan in parentheses. Okay, so we'll be back on that issue in the future, but right now we've got to move on. What do we got going on right now? First of all, the attempted murder of Kavanaugh, the justice, the Supreme Court justice. Now, the leak is what sort of got all of those going and got stirred up a lot of anger. Because there are just a certain group of people who really, really hold strongly to a woman's right to kill her unborn children. But the other part of the problem is that the current government is clearly allowing this lawlessness to go unchecked. Now, a lot of people aren't aware of this, but it is fundamentally, and I understand in America we're used to demonstrations, and I believe demonstrations are good. I'm fully in favor of peaceful demonstrations, but it is any even peaceful demonstrations are unlawful in front of a Supreme Court justice's, I guess any federal judge's house, a place of residence. Now, why is this? Because we do believe in redress of grievances, the ability of citizens to petition the government for the redress of grievances and peaceful demonstration, but it is against the law to try to influence the decision of a judge. Now, I was a lobbyist at the North Dakota State Legislature many years ago. You can lobby legislators and congressmen, but you're not supposed to lobby a judge. And the current administration knows this is unlawful, and yet they're allowing these demonstrations to continue. Now, they do have police officers standing in front of the houses, but that doesn't somehow make it legal. So I'll post the law in the description, and you can read it yourself. But it's very explicit. Demonstrating in front of a Supreme Court justice's home is a federal offense, and they're being allowed to do this. So once again, the party in power is encouraging lawlessness. So we'll probably talk more about that in the future. Well, no, we'll talk more about that in the future. But let's get on to Ukraine. Now, Ukraine, again, as I said before, there's a lot of moral confusion. It goes to the nature of the society that we live in and the condition of American society. And I was listening to Tulsi Gabbard just the other day. She's a military officer, a reserve officer, I guess, former member of Congress. You know, they just, our military people don't seem to know whose side they're on. But they are sending weapons, the United States is sending weapons to Ukraine, and I understand there's a waiting list for people who want to fight for Ukraine. But there is a shortage of training. They're having a hard time finding people to train these soldiers. But I'll put a link there for a description of what's been going on there, and so you can watch it at your leisure. We will keep a watch on that. But the thing that I want to point out is that, you know, the United States made a promise. There was a promise made that the territorial sovereignty of Ukraine would be preserved. And that has not been done. This is what it says. It's the Budapest Memorandum on Security Assurances. And here's the first point. Respect Belarusian, Kazakh, and Ukrainian independence and sovereignty in the existing borders. And that was 1994, so that includes Crimea. Now, what was this? This was in exchange for them giving up their nuclear weapons. They had possession of a lot of nuclear weapons. And Russia took those nuclear weapons, and the United States promised, and Russia promised, that they would preserve Ukrainian independence and sovereignty in the existing borders. It's turning out that Americans, you know, America is a country that makes promises. Well, let me put it this way. America's promises don't mean anything anymore, because they simply don't have the courage to keep their word. And when you hear members of the military saying we should just throw that promise to the wind, that's discouraging. That really is disheartening. We'll keep a watch on that, and I'll put the link again on the description for the podcast, so you can follow through with that if you want to. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the current hearing that's going on regarding the January 6, 2020 riots at the Capitol. And there's a lot of interest focused on it, and that's understandable. But the problem with this hearing is that it is basically a show trial. Now, what happened is that in the process of doing congressional hearings, the party in power, the party with the majority, chairs the committee and chooses the Democratic members of that committee. The minority party, which in this case is the Republicans, chooses the Republican members of that committee. But in this case, Nancy Pelosi refused to accept the choice of the minority leader. His name is Kevin McCarthy, and if the Republicans take the House in the fall, he will be the Speaker of the House. He chose five people. I think there's a total of 10. I don't know exactly, but anyway, there were, I guess, five Republicans. She rejected two of them, Jim Banks and Jim Jordan. Now, I don't know a lot about Jim Banks, but he's a reserve officer, very decent, honorable man. She rejected him. Jim Jordan, I can still understand why she wouldn't like him, because he is very combative and very, he's just very effective and very, very excellent communicator. And so she didn't want him on that committee. Now, we're going to talk later in the show about the Mueller investigation and John Durham's investigation into that. But what happened in the Mueller investigation, they put this false narrative. And when they came to the hearings, Mueller was just destroyed, because he's obviously suffering cognitive decline. And, you know, they didn't have a case. So they thought that by putting these people on the stand, you know, they would really destroy Trump. But in fact, they ended up getting clobbered themselves because of cross-examination from the Republicans on the committee. And Nancy Pelosi didn't want that. She didn't want this to be an open, balanced, two-sided thing. She wants to avoid any cross-examination that's going to challenge the message she wants to put across. So the message is prescribed from before the hearing starts. And so it is, by definition, a show trial. And as far as I know, this is the first time in the history of the United States Congress that this has happened, where the Speaker of the House has refused to allow the minority party to choose the members of the for the committee. Now, she did manage to find a couple of Republicans who really have it in for Trump, and particularly Liz Cheney, who is really has a grudge against Trump because of what he said about her dad. And so the two Republicans who voted for impeachment on the third impeachment, it's not the third impeachment hearing, but it's the second one, but it's the third impeachment attempt. And so those two Republicans have it in for Trump, and she's got them on the committee. But this does not have the respect of, certainly doesn't have the respect of the Republicans. But it is going to backfire. It is going to backfire because in America, you know, it's not like China where the government can say, put out a message and then order all the media outlets not to contradict it. You know, she can control the presentation by the committee, but she can't control how various media outlets respond to it. So I'm going to have a lot more to say about this after the dust settles, after it's over, and we hear how different media outlets respond. But we got to take a news break, and then we'll talk about the Sussman acquittal and John Durham's investigation into the whole Mueller fiasco. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman was acquitted by a D.C. jury for lying to the FBI. But what we learned in that trial was arguably more important than what Sussman did or did not do. Joining me right now is to discuss what came out of the Sussman acquittal and the John Durham investigation is once again former director of national intelligence, prosecutor, and Texas congressman John Ratcliffe. John, thanks very much for coming back. We appreciate you. Everything you said over the last several years has materialized just exactly as you said it. Thanks for educating our viewers so many years ago. What is your reaction to what happened last week with Michael Sussman?
Well, of course, the verdict was disappointing because it was contrary to the evidence. I mean, Michael Sussman's own text messages confirmed exactly what the government said, which is that he claimed to just be a private citizen coming in when he had a story about a connection between a Trump campaign server and a Russian bank, which was clearly false. When the evidence clearly showed that he was acting on behalf of the Clinton campaign, unfortunately, the judge in this case wouldn't allow certain evidence of the Clinton conspiracy to be included, but more importantly, allowed Clinton donors to serve on the jury, as well as other Democratic donors, and even one juror whose daughter was on the same sports team with the defendant. So, you know, unfortunately, it wasn't a just verdict. We have a great jury system in this country, but it doesn't always get it right. This jury found Michael Sussman not guilty. As you recall, another jury found O.J. Simpson not guilty. And I think most Americans that would have paid attention to both trials would have said that they got that wrong. But to the point that you just made, Maria, you're right. To the bigger picture here, John Durham's prosecution may have lost this battle, but they're clearly winning the war. The most powerful testimony to come out of this was admissions by the Clinton campaign about the fact that the Trump-Russia collusion narrative was in fact approved by Hillary Clinton. You remember when I declassified that intelligence, the Clinton campaign said it was utter BS, and the media said it was Russian disinformation. Last week, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, under oath, had to admit, no, Hillary Clinton approved this plan to smear Donald Trump and his campaign with fake allegations of Russian collusion. And her lawyer, Mark Elias, under oath, admitted, yeah, we paid Fusion GPS millions of dollars to create the now debunked Steele dossier, which served as the basis of the investigations into the Trump campaign for more than 4 years. So that's what John Durham's going to be focusing on going forward. And it's why I'm optimistic that not only will he be successful in some of the ongoing prosecutions, but can expand the indictments that he wants to bring, given the involvement of certain FBI officials in spreading a false narrative to the American people.
Okay, so what's going on here? Well, there was a guy by the name of Michael Sussman, and he went to the FBI and pretended to be just an average citizen so that he could have credibility that, you know, he was saying something real about Donald Trump, but in fact he worked for Hillary Clinton. That's the charge, okay? Now, I wasn't in the courtroom, So I hesitate to make a conclusion about a jury's decision when I wasn't there. But what concerns me is later on in the broadcast, this news clip comes from Sunday Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo, and she's talking to John Ratcliffe. And he said later in the broadcast, he said that the jury foreman actually said, we don't think he should be charged or should have been charged. I can't remember what it was. There are bigger things going on in this country than lying to the FBI. What kind of statement is that? So in other words, we found him not guilty, not because we don't think he did it, but because we don't think lying to the FBI is that big a deal. That's appalling. So that concerns me. But the other point that John Ratcliffe makes in this news clip, and it's really, really important, is that in this case, he lost the battle. He is John Durham, the prosecutor, the special prosecutor. And the previous case was a guy who changed something in an email. And that time he did get a conviction, but the penalty was really light, you know, so it's like they didn't really take it seriously. The judge who sentenced him didn't take it seriously. So, you know, this is the second time he hasn't really come out with a strong victory. But Ratcliffe is right. He's losing the battles, but he's winning the war. And so what is the war? It's showing this horrendous fraud, which is what the Mueller investigation was. It was a fraud from the very beginning. Now, you know, of course, I was always suspicious of it because think about what it is, you know. Trump sitting down with the Russians and planning how to, you know, attack America. I mean, the whole thing was nonsense. But we now know this trial there wasn't a whole lot that was new because we've known since Brennan's notes, I don't know, a year or two ago, that Hillary was behind this, but he's one after another, he's putting these people under oath, and so, you know, Hillary's sitting there as the perpetrator of this whole fraud, and he is literally eating her alive one trial at a time. I remember in the fall of 2020, right after the election, and there was so much talk about the election and the corruption in the election, and I don't want to get sidetracked with that issue right now. I'll have lots to say about it at another time, but I always thought they should have a special prosecutor to investigate the election. But just in the whole process, you know, after the election, I hear this statement that Barr has appointed a special prosecutor. And I thought, what? That is not a small news item. I wonder why the media isn't making a bigger deal of it. And, you know, this goes back to what I said in my last podcast about the law of unintended consequences. They made such a big deal through all this whole Mueller investigation that you can't interfere with a special prosecutor. You can't interfere with a special prosecutor. So now, when there's a special prosecutor appointed to investigate this whole Mueller fraud, they don't dare to touch him. And you're going to see more and more about this. So it's very, very disturbing. But it is showing something that we, you know, when I in 2016, when Trump was saying stuff like crooked Hillary and lock her up, and I just, oh, come on, give me a break, you know. She's a little annoying, but that doesn't make her a criminal. But now we are seeing that this woman has a criminal personality. It's absolutely appalling what she put the country through. They spent millions of dollars to fabricate this whole dossier and then used that as an excuse to spy on the president. And now we see, I put a meme the other day, you know, that said, Elon Musk has offered to buy the FBI for $100 billion and the Clintons are refusing to sell, which there's a lot of truth to that. We're finding how much the FBI is colluding to, you know, that's where the collusion was actually, to try to use the forces of the FBI against Trump. And so this has been coming out for some time. You know, we knew from the leaked memos that when they were interviewing Michael Flynn, General Flynn, the memo said, should we go for the truth or should we, I can't remember how they put it, you know, in other words, do we want to get the truth out of this guy or do we want to set a perjury trap? And, of course, he was accused then, you know the process, you've been following the news, of lying to the FBI. That's back when lying to the FBI was considered a serious crime, you know. And it is a crime. But this is so hypocritical. But, you know, it brings to mind the scripture in the Book of Numbers. It says, be sure your sin will find you out. Be sure your sin will find you out. Numbers 32:23. Now, when it says, be sure your sin will find you out, it's not saying that you will discover your sin or that other people will find out your sin. It's saying your sin will find you. It's almost assigning personality to your sin. In other words, your sin is going to catch up with you eventually. It's going to catch up with you. And this evil that Hillary Clinton has perpetrated against the American people is catching up with her. It's very slow, very gradual, but John Durham is not like Mueller. He's not in cognitive decline. He is relentless. And so you're going to see this is not going to play out in the next few weeks. It's going to take time. But you're going to see more and more, you're going to see this case developing against Clinton and against that whole structure. And it's not just an indictment of Clinton. It's an indictment Hillary Clinton. It's an indictment of the media. Now, I don't know if the media can ever be convicted of a crime, but I've lived through the process, watched the process, and the way the media pushed this phony issue for so long. You know, I don't live in the United States, and so I can't just walk over, turn on the TV, and watch news, American news. So I tend to gravitate toward the channels that have 24/7 news feeds. In the past, American news networks have not tended to do that because of advertising. In other countries, the news is funded by the government or whatever, but in like the BBC, you know. But in America, it's by advertising. But in 2016 or somewhere in there, you know, I discovered that CBS had a 24/7 news feed on their website. They didn't use YouTube. They used their website. It was a little annoying because every time there's a commercial, you hear da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, they couldn't play the commercial on their internet feed. But I watched them, and I watched the way they talked about this case. And that's just one example, but I heard many examples. And, you know, the media pushing this narrative, determined to try to move Trump out of office, a duly elected president out of office. And all this talk about impeachment and the Mueller investigation, it's, you know, the Washington Post on the day of the inauguration said, you know, this, the impeachment has begun. So it's a sad, sad story. But God is not mocked. God is not mocked. And when God decides that the truth is going to come out, nobody is going to be able to keep it hidden. The truth will come out. The truth about the election, the truth about the January 6th riots, the truth about all the phony impeachments, the truth is going to come to light because God is not mocked. Okay, I'll try to talk about that, about the hearing. Hopefully we'll have some more information about that next time. Thanks for being with us, you guys, and we'll see you next time. God is on the throne. This podcast is hosted online at beijingdiary.podbean.com. That's beijingdiary.podbean.com.